batting cleanup. We have, and actually, she's not only in the fourth position, but also covering the fifth position as well. So Jill Artsberger will be doing the next two presentations. So whatever I say right now, please recall for when she's about to speak for the next. Is the Senior Program Manager for the USA Center for Rural Public Health Preparedness at the Texas A&M Health Science Center School of Rural Public Health, a CDC-funded Center for Public Health Preparedness. Jill has been assisting rural communities in the states of Texas and South Dakota to enhance preparedness capabilities through the development of planning templates, education and training activities, and tabletop and functional exercises. So please welcome Jill.
Thank you. In the interest of time, I may present an abbreviated version of this first presentation because the second one is about twice as long. And I'm presenting on behalf of Sherry Falgu, who served as the project manager on this project. However, she can join us today, so I'd like to give her an acknowledgement before I begin. And I also have no relationship to disclose with this project. And quickly, I'll give you an overview of the program. First, let me give you a little bit of background of the Rural Ready Community Planning Workbook. That is this document here. It was developed in June of 2005 by the School of Rural Public Health. It was in collaboration with the Texas Department of State Health Services and the Texas Institute for Health Policy Research. And basically, the guide was used to assist in preparedness planning for rural communities without hospitals. Texas is a very large state. We have 254 counties, and many of them do not have hospitals located in those counties, nor local health departments. The workbook included, the original workbook included an overview on disaster planning and specific focus areas for regional response planning, which we want to focus on as a regional response. And it also had components that included communications, medical operations, security, pharmaceuticals and supplies, patient tracking, transportation, infection control, training, and coordinated regional planning. And this workbook was put together by conducting rural preparedness roundtables, which is something the School of Rural Public Health has been doing since about 1998. We conducted 12 roundtables in 65 counties in Texas that did not have hospitals in order to gather input and information, best practices and lessons learned to incorporate into this workbook. And since then, though this was in 2005, we have developed an updated version. And as you'll see, it's quite larger. It's about twice as big as the first one. And it includes information, it includes the original document and also information on emergency management structure, collaboration with partners, prevention and mitigation strategies, preparedness response, recovery, special considerations, and PAN-FLU planning, because this is an all-hazards workbook, but we did include PAN-FLU planning at this point, planning resources and forms and templates. And I'd like to go ahead and let you know that I brought copies of this workbook on key drives, and I set them in the back table to the left of the exit door. You're more than welcome to grab one on the way out, in addition to the companion guide, which I will talk about as well. So please feel free to grab as many of these as you like, and then I have the PDF of the guide on here. And this project was funded by the National Rural Health Association, and we formed an emergency preparedness working group, and the members were, they consisted of members from migrant health centers and community health centers that were located in rural areas across the United States. And the objective of the project was to create a companion guide to use with the workbook that was specific for community health centers and migrant health centers. The original intentions of the workbook were for rural communities. And these are the states that were represented on the Emergency Preparedness Work Group. I'll give you a little bit of background on community health centers and migrant health centers if you're not familiar with them. They are funded by HRSA, and they're located in or they serve a high-need community. And they provide comprehensive primary health care, and services to all. And fees are adjusted on ability to pay, and they do serve all ages and with or without health insurance. And for this project, there are different health centers. We focus specifically on community health centers and migrant health centers. And again, we formed the work group with the, there were 18 centers represented from 10 different states. And the states, as you can see, were Minnesota, North Dakota, West Virginia, Maine, Texas, Missouri, Kentucky, and Alaska. And the states were chosen based on previous relationships that we had with these states from working in the past, or we looked at the demographics of the states and chose rural states. If we didn't have a previous relationship with the state, we picked them up and called them, and we had positive responses across the board. Everyone that was invited to serve on the working group accepted the invitation.
Do you mean South Dakota and North Dakota?
I'm so embarrassed because I didn't make this, and no, but it's North Dakota, and I'll have to get on Sherry for that one. Okay, that's funny because I do a lot of work in South Dakota too, and I didn't even catch that, so I apologize. Thank you. Next, I'll review some of the steps of the project. This was actually, we had toyed with the notion of actually bringing the members of the work group together, but since they were so located across the United States, it made more sense just to have our meetings via a conference call. And so the first step was to disseminate the workbook to the committee members to review before the call. And so this was sent prior to the first conference call, and we wanted to look at their current planning levels, common issues, and best practices that they had experienced with their centers and their communities. And bless you. There were several common issues to all of the states and centers, even though we were dispersed across the United States. And I'll just go through a few of these quickly, but just for example, many of the centers are located in geographically isolated areas, and there's limited communication systems anyway, but in a disaster or after a disaster, it's safe to assume that there will be no communication systems in place. And additionally, many of them talked about the fact that they responded to an event in the past, and they reported delays and assistance from regional and state agencies. And one of the states specifically that cited this was Texas, because these groups, the calls were done very recently after our response to Hurricane Rita, and so we had a lot of confusion on how to actually request resources, the chain of command, and the protocol. And as always, like we see in rural areas, there's a lack of healthcare personnel and healthcare facilities, so that's a common issue that we all shared. There was also, at this point in time, concerns about liability for volunteer use, and also in rural communities, so many people wear multiple hats, there's a concern with the overextension of volunteers, because they may be volunteers for several different organizations, and we can't expect them to be in the same place at the same time. And another common theme is communication capabilities in general. And a few more common issues that came up was how to sustain financial resources, continuity of operations, which is not definitely for rural areas as well. This is something across the board. How to secure funding, the proper channels and protocol for requesting resources, which I alluded to in the previous slide. And they want to make sure to be compliant in reference to state and federal regulations and funding requirements, which is hard to do with them changing all the time. And I have a good example in a couple of slides of what happened in creation of this document. And also, it's important to be able to identify, reach, and serve vulnerable and at-risk populations. And on a positive note, we also had them share their best practices with us. And so they had the opportunity to do this, and these included, they weren't limited, but these were some that we did hear multiple times, that it's good to have an established system in place to address challenges prior to an event, not during the event. And same thing for identifying common resources that you can share with surrounding counties and communities. Also, gaining an understanding of roles and expectations from the local and regional levels prior to an event. Having streamlined communication systems, open lines of communication, knowing what those are. And this seems to work really well, is having regularly scheduled meetings and planning activities to keep people engaged in the planning process. And again, it's very important to plan to use your entire staff and your volunteer base, and to make sure that your staff knows that they will be utilized in a response, possibly in a role they're not used to working in. And the second teleconference meeting would have gone a lot smoother. However, we provided them a draft evaluation, a draft companion guide to evaluate. And the purpose of the call was to have feedback on that. However, about 2 hours before the scheduled call, HRSA, the Bureau of Primary Health Care, released program information notice with two main notices that pertained to the guide we were working on, and that it was going to affect it and we were going to have to modify it. So on that phone call, several of the work group members had not even heard yet of these notices. So that phone call actually was spent talking about the notices, the expectations, what needed to be changed. And so it did set us back a little bit, and we also talked about feedback on the draft companion guide. And fortunately, most of it was more of organization and formatting that needed to be changed. So we did use that time to talk about what we needed to integrate into the companion guide based on the new notices. So after the second call, we went and focused more on the centers. It was still a little bit more geared to rural communities, so it had more of a center focus. It also included centers' instructions on utilizing the workbook effectively. We also pointed out that this is not the only resource for the centers. It's one of many. And in the workbook, we have many resources listed and printed out for them as well. And we addressed sections that weren't applicable and removed those from the draft, and then we merged the newly released expectations based on the notices I just referred to. And luckily, it just took one more phone call, and we had a final companion guide, and it was approved by all of the working group members. And this is a copy of the planning guide, and again, there's stacks of them. Please feel free to take as many as you want. But what it includes is some background information on rural emergency planning. Common preparedness issues among rural communities are listed, as well as the center best practices. There's a Q&A section on rural emergency management planning. It also lists out basic planning concepts, processes, and key elements, and hopefully what their desired outcome will be based on using the guide. And again, our desired outcome was to engage and enhance the participation of the centers, both community health centers and migrant health centers, in developing their community's plan and integrating it into either the state, regional, or local level plan as well. And I will go ahead and move on to the next one.